The first disc jockey convention and radio programming seminar in Kansas City, sponsored by the Storrs Broadcasting Company of Omaha, Nebraska, and hosted by WHB. Prepared for the third annual Great Plains Radio Symposium, October 31st, 2008. Sponsored by the A.Q. Miller School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Kansas State University. This recording is submitted to Professors David McFarland and Steve Smethers. I'm Richard Fatherly. This is the third and final installment on the several contributions to Great Plains radio history by WHB in Kansas City, then under the ownership of the Mid-Continent Broadcasting Company, beginning in 1954, and later known as the Storrs Broadcasting Company. In my first 2006 presentation at K-State, I outlined WHB's pioneering introduction of the Top 40 radio format, with 6-state coverage at 710 kHz on the AM dial. WHB later swapped frequencies with KCMO, moving to 810, KCMO moving to 710. With its enormous ratings and big signal reach, WHB became the modern radio programming model for a revolution in the broadcasting industry, with single and multi-station operators coming to Kansas City to monitor its trend-setting programming from 1955 into the early 1960s. My second presentation in 2007 centered on WHB's 1957 pioneering efforts to launch audience participation telephone talk programming under the pretext of providing a new level of public service, which it accomplished. But the real reason was to recapture audience lost to 10 p.m. television news broadcasts and post-midnight programming on Kansas City television stations. The title of the new WHB program was Nightbeat, featuring Lee Vogel, an aggressive moderator who invited comment on controversial subjects. In short, Top 40 and Telephone Talk were two breakout programming ideas originated in the Great Plains by WHB in Kansas City. Top 40 in 1954 and Telephone Talk on Nightbeat in 1957. A third event, sparked by Storrs Radio and first hosted by WHB, was the first-ever Pop Music Disc Jockey Convention and Radio Programming Seminar held in Kansas City at the Muehlbach Hotel on March 7th, 8th, and 9th, 1958. Coordinated by newly employed Bill Stewart, registration to attend the event was gratis and was open to all disc jockeys, program directors, record industry management personnel, and broadcasting industry management personnel, said the full-page ads in broadcasting and other radio TV magazines. Stewart joined Storrs KOWH in 1956 to fill the position of program director, following the exit of James O'Neill to a similar post in Wichita. Todd was preparing to sell KOWH, shuffle KOWH and WHB personnel to fill positions at newly acquired WDGY and WQAM, and launch several station promotions, including a $210,000 declining jackpot treasure hunt insured by Lloyd's of London to pump up the ratings of KOWH in Omaha and WDGY in Minneapolis-St. Paul. The promotion was the brainchild of Storrs KOWH, WTIX, and now WDGY program veteran Don Loughnane. Stewart's writing and marketing skills would help build a national reputation for the four Storrs stations as Todd prepared to negotiate the purchase of KOMA in Oklahoma City, following his sale of KOWH in 1957 to William F. Buckley, Jr. And with that reputation, Stewart was busy posturing himself as Todd Storrs' whiz kid programming authority. The Kansas City Convention and Programming Seminar was clearly Stewart's project. Todd was too busy completing the sale of KOWH, closing the WQAM transfer from Miami Herald ownership to Storrs Radio, and changing the name of the Mid-Continent Broadcasting Company to the Storrs Broadcasting Company. Further, he was commencing quiet negotiations to buy WWEZ AM 690 in New Orleans, which became WTIX, whose previous low-power dial position stores donated to New Orleans public schools as an educational station. That would prevent another commercial operator from buying 1450 kilohertz to, as George Armstrong called it, ape or copy the store's top 40 format. The new WTIX Regional 690 dial position, with its upgrade to 10,000 watts, extended store's signal inland along the Gulf of Mexico mainland from Pensacola, Florida to Galveston, Texas. Meanwhile, Stewart framed the convention in the language of a seminar, offering privileged information from high-dollar media experts and radio group executives and major market air talent, featuring a gala all-star show with Tony Bennett, the Four Lads, Laverne Baker, Don Rondo, Andy Williams, the Crew Cuts, and many others. For this first-ever pop music disc jockey convention and programming seminar, it would be no cost to you for any of the functions, including the talent-packed all-star show, which follows immediately, underwritten by America's leading record companies. Thus, your expenditures will be limited to transportation and hotel accommodations, wrote Stewart in the display advertisement. It turned out to be a hail fellow well-met convocation of radio voices. How they all arrived in Kansas City was anyone's guess. But they all made it to hear Sidney Roslow, president of the Pulse Incorporated, a national rating service. Frank Stisser, president of C.E. Hooper Company, another rating service. Gordon McClendon, president of the McClendon Stations. Harold Krellstein, president of the Plow Stations. Arthur McCoy, a vice president of the John Blair Company, a national radio sales representative. And Adam Young, president of Adam Young Incorporated, another national sales representative. According to the Stewart advertisement, this was only a partial list of media management types who would speak. Another partial list of speakers included high-dollar New York disc jockeys Martin Block, Jack Lacey, Al Jazbo Collins, Peter Tripp, and Chicago's Howard Miller. According to the Kansas City Star and Kansas City Times, participating recording companies included Columbia, Dot, Mercury, RCA Victor, Atlantic, Roulette, Capitol, Jubilee, Cadence, Cap, Ebb, Fraternity, ABC Paramount, Lynn, Argo, and Epic. A Saturday morning breakfast opened the event with welcoming remarks by Todd Storrs, followed by Kansas City Mayor H. Roe Bartle, whose towering frame and big voice helped to set the tone that Kansas City was the home of WHB, the big flagship station in the middle of the nation for the creators of the modern radio movement. Martin Block, WABC New York disc jockey, formerly of WNEW, reminded the audience it was he who originated disc jockey techniques 25 years earlier with his make-believe ballroom. It would be a full day on Saturday, March 8th, for panel discussions on such topics as what the DJ can do for the advertiser at the local level, increasing income and prestige through related outside activities. Are today's radio rating services obsolete? How to run profitable and successful record hops? The ingredients for today's formula radio. Is rock and roll a bad influence on teenagers? The record artist's obligation to the nation's youth. What the time buyer looks for in buying a market. And the program director, friend or foe? Stewart reminded registrants, you can come in Saturday morning and not miss any of the business sessions. Also, the 1 p.m. Sunday adjournment means you can be comfortably back at your microphones Monday. Roundtable groups and panels invited the participation of everyone in attendance. Pick a question of interest, and chances were good an expert on the subject could answer it. Announcers, news voices, programming, production, and promotion people, and sales-minded management types were looking for answers. Some would look for a prostitute, strutting their stuff at the Mulebach Hotel. The successful disc jockey, reported the Kansas City Times, established himself as a personality to his listeners. A roundtable of record spinners agreed today. If a listener wants to hear records, he can turn to any radio station, they said. WHB disc jockey Eddie Clark said, "Radio men lead the listening audience, not the jukeboxes." Don McLeod of WJBK in Detroit put it this way, "You wouldn't put your money in a jukebox to play a song you hadn't heard, would you?" Panelists agreed that knowing when to stop talking is the most important thing to remember. Ideal timing is 15 seconds for introducing a record and about a minute between selections, reported the newspaper. George W. Bud Armstrong, newly named store's executive vice president and WHB general manager, had the rapt attention of everyone as he explained what I look for in a prospective DJ. He listed the qualities of believability, sincerity, microphone integrity, and the ability to accept responsibility, reported the newspaper. Over ongoing applause, Armstrong would promise a second convention on March 6th, 7th, and 8th, 1959, in Kansas City. A promise that was reversed when Bill Stewart's display ad in trade magazines announced the second convention would be held in late May 1959 at the glamorous Miami Beach Americana Hotel near Todd's WQAM, the host station. Stewart's intention was to become Todd Storr's right-hand man. His outstanding pre-convention publicity and promotion, convention program content, and Kansas City post-convention follow-up served his ambitions. If the Kansas City convention had been a smash success, the Miami Beach convention would be a whopper. And it was. But Stewart's ambitions with Todd would later be brought to a screeching stop. Meanwhile, back at the Muehlbach, Mitch Miller, then the boss of Columbia Records' popular music division, charged the top 40 types in attendance as having abdicated your programming to the corner record shop, to the 18 to 14-year-olds, to the pre-shave crowd that makes up 12% of the country's population and 0% of its buying population, once you eliminate ponytail ribbons, popsicles, and peanut brittle, as reported in the Kansas City Times. At best, Miller said, the top 40 presents a philosophical problem on a par with which came first, the chicken or the egg? Does the demand come because you play it first, or do kids demand it because they find it on the top 40? Startup top 40 broadcasters in the audience knew that Mitch Miller may not have known many of them were piling up huge ratings and raking in fat revenues, due in part to their playing the very music Miller was complaining about, a criticism aimed at the coming flood tide of post-World War II preteen and teenage consumers. By the early 1960s, top 40 operators would be scrambling to attract their share of a coming $500 million windfall in advertising aimed at the youth market consumer for soft drinks, trendy clothing, health and beauty aids, shoes, pizza, and other fast foods, movie passes, records, jewelry, outdoor recreation, and the like. In one of many top 40 success stories, Ford Motor Company chose the nation's leading top 40 stations to help introduce the 1964 Mustang automobile. Meanwhile, top 40's teens were morphing into the 18 to 24-year-olds and would grow into the 18 to 34-year-olds, or influenceables, as stores would call them. Media and marketing moguls would later refer to them as young, upwardly mobile yuppies. Following the advent of television, and despite Mitch Miller's widely quoted objections to youth market music, the 1960s became local radio's benchmark decade for growing revenues exceeding $1 billion in 1968. WHB salesman Bill Lytell said of the convention and his employment with WHB,
"It was an exciting atmosphere. It was new ground that was being broken. We felt like we were pioneers in an industry that had never seen anything like this before." Todd Storrs instigated the first annual disc jockey convention that took place at the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City. It was an exciting time. We were pioneers. We had everything going for us.
The late May 1959 Miami Beach Convention would follow the same program format, but feature a different lineup of recording artists, including Peggy Lee and Anita Bryant. Following the 1959 convention, the U.S. House of Representatives Legislative Oversight Committee wanted to know the relationship between the store's radio stations and 18 record companies, who picked up a $117,000 tab at the Americana Hotel, according to the Omaha World-Herald, for February 11, 1960. The Miami Beach Convention became the springboard for allegations of record play-for-pay to disc jockeys, known as payola. It was a hot topic, but it was soon dwarfed by network television's Rigged Game Shows 21 and the $64,000 question. By 1960, the Federal Communications Commission was moving on legislation making payola and rigged game shows a criminal offense. The late May 1959 Miami Beach Convention attracted some 2,500 people, according to Bill Stewart. They were the people of that day, recalled Stewart for Billboard magazine's radio TV editor Claude Hall in its December 30, 1972 edition. The Miami Herald newspaper distanced itself from WQAM after selling it to stores in 1956 with the scathing headline, "Booze, Broads, and Bribes," in characterizing the store's sponsored event. Broadcasting Magazine for November 2, 1970, brought back convention memories, saying in part, "Todd Stores and his station group were sponsors of the first annual disc jockey convention in Kansas City. The second, held the next year in Miami Beach, was the last. Record company entertaining got out of hand." Stores Vice President and WQAM General Manager Jack Sandler accepted a congressional subpoena from House payola investigators. A similar subpoena, said the Associated Press, was served on the Americana Hotel for delivery of its records covering the convention, at which some 2,000 disc jockeys were wined and dined, according to the Omaha World-Herald. Stewart would exit the store's broadcasting company in 1959, moving to Dallas, where he was employed by a jingle production company. In a peculiar irony, Stewart was later recruited by George W. Bud Armstrong to work at WHB as its publicity and promotions director. He joined the station on April 13, 1964, the day of Todd Storr's death. Stewart left WHB in late October 1966, returning to Dallas, where he worked for broadcaster Gordon McClendon. On December 6, 1985, the Dallas Morning News reported Stewart's death at the age of 58, saying that he was instrumental in introducing top 40 radio programming in the early 1950s. During the 1960s and 70s, he acted as creative consultant for broadcast groups throughout the country, winding up in the real estate business as a broker. While no cause of death was given in the Dallas Morning News obituary, radio industry chit-chat had it that Bill Stewart had taken his own life. Stewart's legacy to the radio broadcasting industry was his clever marketing, promotion, and programming strategies to capture the attention of advertisers and to captivate the tune-in and maintenance of radio audiences from the 1950s through the 1970s. In addition to his employment by Storrs Radio, Stewart had carved out a national reputation with the McClendon Corporation and became widely known as a successful programming consultant. He was later inducted into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. Recording from Kansas City, I'm Richard Fatherly.